Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie podcast. Why do I never look up what episode this is before I start the podcast? Someone just messaged me a stock tip. I'm not going to take that right now. It's episode 79. Episode 79 of the Tone Junkie podcast. My. How far we have come. My. How y'all doing out there? It's, it's day 10 of the quarantine. No, I guess it is. It's day 10 of the president's 15 days to slow the spread of this COVID-19 thing. And so we're inside. But today is an audio-only version of the podcast. You might be going, HW, what's up? You're not helping the YouTube guys out? You're not feeling the YouTube thing? No, I listen to like all my podcasts on YouTube. So I just figured I should make it available because a lot of times when I'm sitting in front of my computer, I just have YouTube up and I click on a podcast and I click on another one and it's just on there while I'm working in the background. But I don't know, I just don't always reach for my phone to put that on, or I don't always reach for, you know, let me look up the audio feed of this podcast. You just let the video play, right? So what I'm experiencing on there has just been, you know, whatever. Hey, some people want to watch it. Some people don't want to watch it. And that's cool. Primarily, though, I mean, all the listeners are on the actual podcast. I mean, the numbers comparatively are clear about that. Way more people listening than watching on YouTube. But the reason I wanted to, I didn't want to get the whole camera out and do a whole exporting thing because I'm working on a different YouTube video today, which is going to be out later today. And I started filming some B-roll for it this morning. But I wanted this podcast to serve as an audio-only dry run of a video I'm making. It's a video I've been trying to make for a while, and it's called Why the Kemper is Better Than a Tube Amp. What, I know, you're triggered. I'm triggered. Someone just sent a paper airplane through my window. Let me unfold it. Oh, look, it's a death threat from the tube amp community. No, you didn't know where that was going, did you? No, someone just threw that in. Here comes a rock and a Molotov cocktail. No, I want this to serve as a dry run because I'm about to do this YouTube video and it's not going to be fancy because what am I going to compare? Like, here's a tube amp I mic'd up. It doesn't sound as good as a Kemper. People will be like, that's anecdotal. And it is anecdotal. So I've tried to use some logic to break down three reasons why I think the Kemper is better than a tube amp. Better. Number one, flexibility. Number two, portability. Number three, tone. That's right, tone. But before we get to tone, I want to talk about flexibility. And this is going to help me like just solidify my thoughts so that I can get in front of the camera and try to give this in a succinct way. I think the Kemper is better than a tube amp. And when I say better, what does that mean? Well, it means because of these three things, I'm going to demonstrate for you how I think the Kemper actually beats a tube amp. Flexibility, to me, is sort of the unsung variable that I never hear people talk about with amplifiers and stuff. And it's like, we tend to view, I think it's like this, guitar players tend to look around the stage and look at drummers and go, man, they got it worse than me when it comes to load in. So shut up and don't complain, you know, get your stuff set up and help the drummer. But we never look at the keyboardist and go, man, they got it really easy. Or even the bassist and go, man, they got it really easy. I mean, we do, but we don't let that inform our decision of like, I should have it easy also. Which is ironic because the Kemper was actually birthed out of an interaction between Christoph and one of the guys on his team there who was playing guitar. And Christoph said, man, I should get you a direct solution like I have. Who I guess at the time was running around with just a keyboard or just a laptop or something. Probably in that year, it was just a keyboard. It was the guy Thomas, who you see in some of the videos. He does some of the videos for Kemper. He does all the videos for Kemper. But I mean, he's in front of the camera sometimes. And he was playing guitar and they were in a band together. And Christoph said, I should make you a direct solution. And that's how they started putting the Kemper together. Because by that time, Christoph was just doing the Virus stuff, right? The Virus synthesizers. Ironic. It was called Virus. Flexibility, I think, is the thing that's really the least thought about and talked about. And let me get an example. Now with the Kemper Cone, here's the three places I play the guitar, okay? I play the guitar at my home. I play the guitar out at my church. For you, that could be a church or a bar or whatever. It's a live gig. And then I also play my Kemper in a studio environment, right? And so the three kind of ways that I feel the Kemper fits better in a tube amp is, look, a tube amp has one application. You turn it on and it functions in one way. How do you get the sound out? The sound always comes out the speakers. Now, I'm not talking about modern stuff that could have like an IR out on the back, but you have to buy an external piece of equipment to get a direct output. What I love about the Kemper is that now with the Kemper cab, I can plop it on top of the Kemper cab at home and I have in the room amp tone. When I go out to a studio, I can listen through studio monitors or the headphones that a producer gives me, and I can give him a clean, direct feed without asking him to mic up anything, without asking him to do this or that, or what effects are you going to put on post? I don't have to work anything out. Here's my clean, direct signal. Here you go. Where's my monitoring device? I'll go from there. He can hear it. I can hear it. It's right out of the XLRs in the back. And when I play live, I have unending options of what I want to send front of house and what I want to send me personally. I can send everything front of house. I can get my monitor feed directly from them. I can monitor live on stage with a power Kemper through a real guitar speaker and give me my cab and onstage feel. I can use the Kemper cone to get onstage feel as well. I can use their monitors or my own powered monitor that has my own guitar signal in it, separate from the signal I'm sending them. Maybe I want less wet effects, less delay. Maybe I want stereo for my mix. Or maybe I'm going to send him stereo, but I only need mono on stage for me to just monitor my sound. The options are really endless. I could even send him stereo with effects and I can listen back through I can get just my direct sound to come through my Kemper cab. So I have cab simulation on his sound, but on my sound, there's no cab simulation and it's just coming through a real speaker. So I get a real authentic sound on stage and he's getting a really authentic mic'd up sound. And we don't have to deal with microphones. We don't have to deal with everything. The tube amplifier, if you think about it, was designed in a time when we needed guitar amplifiers to be heard on stage. But that's not 2020. Tube amplifiers, early ones, early Fenders from the early 1950s and the late 40s, actually had microphone and guitar channels, instrument channels, guitar and instrument channels, so that the singer could be heard over the drums. This is not something we experience in 2020. No one is running sound this way, except maybe some punks at a house party. And when I say punks, I mean, you know, they're going to be playing like very sort of avant-garde punk rebellious music. If your idea of sound at a house party is, let me plug into my guitar amplifier from my microphone. Like, we don't even have a PA of any kind. But you got to remember, in the early 1950s, there were no PAs. There were not like publicly available PAs. So to be heard over the drums, early amplifiers were actually designed to function as PA units. Let me get the bass and let me get the guitar and the vocals above the drums. But that's not our challenge in 2020. So the flexibility of a tube amp is really limited to the flexibility which was offered at the time to provide a PA solution. Now, by the 1960s, we see some of that disappearing, but we don't see a move for a direct sound application in tube amps really ever until we get to a couple people using, stuff like in the 80s, you know, or Palmer units. But that's by far the exception to the rule. Whereas now in 2020, with modern sound design, where are you playing without a PA of any kind? I mean, I'm just not. Like, when do you want to run your vocals through a guitar amplifier? It just, never. So the very design of a guitar amplifier, it's really designed for another time. And it hasn't modernized. And it hasn't modernized because we have believed that digital could not get us to the tone of an amplifier. More on tone a little later. But I want to talk about portability. Because portability, I think, is one of those things that we have just, portability is one of the things that it's like, oh, you're a wimp. You don't want to carry your amp. Oh, shut up, kid. You don't care about tone. If you cared about tone, you'd carry your... Well, wait a minute. The industry has changed tremendously. Now, what I see around Nashville is more is studios are in people's houses. Platinum records that are going to get millions of streams on Spotify and stuff are not being made in recording studios that cost millions of dollars. They're largely being made not just in people's basements, but a lot of times people have a studio on their property. I'll tell you, in Nashville, it's very common to go buy a place out in the country about half hour, 45 minutes or an hour out of Nashville. Producers will buy a place, they build a house on a piece of land, they take a barn, they totally retrofit it, and it's their studio. And they put a lot of money into these home studios. But their whole thing is this: I can put $200,000 into my own studio on my property and have a professional recording studio with everything built out, maybe more, maybe $300,000. Or I can continue and I can make a lot of money off big acts or acts coming to my studio and paying me to record. I can put up the money up front and I can reap those benefits to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars per recording project more in my pocket, maybe even $100,000 more in recording fees and renting out this studio and renting out my services and working from right here. Or I can pay that to some studio over the course of projects. These sort of smaller recording studios that are super nice that have, I mean, you'll walk in and producers will have their Grammys up and they have all their professionally done stuff on their property. Or a lot of people are just taking their basements, converting them to professional studios, and you have, they're cutting big records in these places. It's very common in the Nashville. If you don't believe me, go to Zillow in the Nashville market, just look up houses. I guarantee you'll find one in every 20 houses has a recording studio of some kind like built into it. That's not an exaggeration. And if you go up into high dollar, you will often find larger properties with a lot of land where what used to be a horse stall has been completely converted to a fully insulated, quality, state-of-the-art. I went to a guy's studio. He had three Harleys parked inside a barn with a giant studio, recording equipment, all this recording equipment. He had his Grammys lined up. He had a bar built in there, refrigerators. He had completely sound isolated rooms, multiple ones that were all glass that you could see the performers. And then he had like a full video setup where he taught recording engineering classes on the internet, live on the internet, right out of the studio where he was making platinum country music records. I mean, it was incredible. I said, what's the cost of this thing? They said, oh, well over $500,000. But the guy was making a bunch of money off teaching from and live streaming from his property. He was charging big name acts to come to his property, chill out, hang out in his barn, drink all they want, just relax, ride his Harleys around. He was just having fun with people and he was reaping the benefits, right, of building his own studio. Not to mention, I'll tell you for sure, all these places are closed. There's so few big studios that are still out there right now. All of the ones have closed. I even know a guy in Nashville who invests in analog equipment. He goes and buys all the old equipment because he's going in and going, what records were cut on this original Neve board? And he's buying it for a lot of money, but he has no problem spending 20 or 30 grand on a Neve board that basically was 200,000 when they put it in. And nobody wants it right now, but he knows there's going to be a return back to analog just from the enthusiast market. And he's got pieces of history. He's got boards that are responsible for recording like more popular music than like anybody. I mean, this is like real Abbey Road situations here, you know? Where did Oasis do all their stuff? He's got that board. Where did Celine Dion go? I mean, all this stuff was recorded on analog boards in the 90s that nobody wants anymore. He's buying it. He can clone the stuff, sell the stuff, it's a smart business model. But this idea of portability is increasingly important when you realize that as a guitar player, I'm seeing all sorts of names in the music industry that are just available to do tracks for hire out of their own studios or out of studios in people's homes or on their properties. And for them to be able to show up with their rig that they're familiar with and not have to pay for cartage and not have to worry about getting cartage an hour away up some gravel road or something because this guy's literally running horses or those mule carts, those mule, when I say mule carts, I mean those four-wheelers that are called mules that people often have on big properties. You don't have to worry about getting all your stuff out there and doing it. And it's quick, easy setup, and time is money. And the other thing is being able to save your presets is incredible because you can save the sound of a recording. Portability is also hugely important for a lot of acts. Like, I know from talking to Michael Britt, you know, he was telling me, oh, we got a whole new tour management company because when you're on the road right now, there's a way to make money. You have to go on the road and you have to play constantly and then you come home for a while. And you go on the road and you play constantly and you go home for a while. It used to be, let's go on a 12-month tour and we'll play four nights a week and we'll have 3 days a week off and we'll just be in all these cities and we'll explore all these great cities. You cannot make any money doing that anymore. The stadium tours are gone. There's not very few people are selling out stadiums all around the country right now. What you can do is go out, play casinos. You can play stadiums. You can play casinos. You can play houses of blues. You can play theaters and stuff. Live Nation's got everything on lockdown. But you got to go out and hit it hard for 2-3 weeks, then take a break. Hit it hard for a week, then take it. And the way that you don't want to have 3 and 4 days on the road. It's too expensive to hold you up out there for the pay that's coming in. It just is. It's harder to make a living on the road right now. So you have to, you can still do it, but you've got to make it in a different way. Before, you could be loosey-goosey and you can just, oh yeah, well, we'll go and we'll play 10 shows in a row and then we'll take 6 days off and we'll go stay at the Hilton, the JW Marriott in Chicago. We'll just chill out and we'll be fine. And before, maybe you could make so much money that you could do that, but gone are those days. So now you go out, you hit the road hard, and then you come home and you hang out with your family, and you go out and you come home and you go out and you come home. And portability in that situation is the difference between being able to say yes to a profitable one-off gig or not. I had the opportunity to go play with a buddy of mine named Michael Farron in Florida for a one-off gig at a conference. And he said to me, hey, can you come? Can you bring the Kemper? And we got your airfare, travel and everything. And there'll be some pay for this little gig. It wasn't much pay, but what's cool about it is I got to go to Florida and I was going to get to go hang out at Universal Studios for the day. Cause we were playing at the Hard Rock at the Universal Studios, in Orlando. Had I had to ask for, I told him, I said, hey, whatever they're getting for backline, ignore it. I can bring my Kemper and we're good. So we actually played 2 gigs because we played at this conference, then we played at the Hard Rock. So there was 2 little gigs on this 2-day outing. We show up. I've got my Kemper in my carry-on. So I can't lose it. I've got it in my carry-on. I have it with me the whole time. I just literally shoved it in my carry-on suitcase, carried it on the plane with my clothes, 2 days worth of clothes, and I had a backpack on my back. Get to the hotel, take it out, fire it up. It's all good. It's working. Bring it to the gig. There it is. Bring it back. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. You guys, it was so easy. And portability, had I had to bring a 112, I couldn't, what would I do? I'd have to get a giant flight case. I'd have to put it on. I'd have to risk them breaking it. Because even when you get FAA or TSA approved cases, they can still break your stuff. And they still do all the time. Then I have to make sure it worked. Then I have to bring everything. Then I got to load it in the van that morning. I got to get up earlier. I got to have more setup time, more time the sound guy. I showed up. And sometimes, look, I'll be honest. With a Kemper, you tell a sound guy, hey, I just need an XLR. They're like, well, we have mics and stuff. I'm like, dude, I just need an XLR. They're like, well, I don't know. I'm like, bro, please. He gives me an XLR, plugs it in. He gets my guitar solo and he goes, oh, I get it. Well, yeah, man, that's what I'm saying. I go, so look, dude, it's, then we're done. There's no more talking to the sound guy. He can go work on other issues. He can go figure out why the cello mic isn't working, which is a problem we had that day. He can go figure out why the bass channel had some noise in it, a small hum, right? He can go find ground loops and whatever. He can soundtrack the drums more thoroughly, so you're going to sound better. And I'm able to just bring my stuff and leave it there. You know what I'm saying? So portability, I think, is the unsung hero of being able to just walk into a place and have the appropriate measure. And it ties into flexibility. They almost could be one and the same. But number three is tone. I am going to make the case for you that the Kemper actually sounds better than a tube amp. Now, let me explain. I've talked about this before. Let's say that I had gone on that gig in Florida, and I had decided I was going to plug in, I was going to bring my amplifier, and they were going to hand me a microphone. They're always going to hand me a 57, and I have no idea what it does at the board. I don't have time to get on headphones and have someone play the guitar and dial in my 57 to the exact millimeter I want it. I'm going to hastily throw that thing in front of the cone, and it's going to sound, and I'm going to know where I want it, but it's going to sound like I'm putting a 57 hastily in front of the cone, and that is going to be that. That's the tone I'm going to get. And here is my question to you, my friends. What is closer to the tone you would get off of a record? Is it a single 57 on your amp that may be your amp or a backline amp that you didn't bring with some effects that you are line checking before a gig? Or is it a Kemper profile created by a Tone Junkie or a Michael Britt or a whoever, ready to go with fine-tuning adjustments to microphone placement, with pre's all the way to the front, with EQ added, with adjustments put on, with the definition control in the cabinet section, all that stuff, to really work for your guitar, or a sound that you've dialed in that you know works live in other venues? Is it really the difference between, let me just replicate a twin and my Fender Strat and my pedals, which I got about, like, is that really, or a backline AC30, is that really closer? Is that really going to sound better? Or is it a version of the sound? Like, here's my real question. What percentage tone are you going to nail with a backline amp and a 57 compared to an actual Royer 121 and a 57 or a 545 put on that thing with a pre's finely tuned? What's going to be closer? I'll tell you from experience, it's not that backline amp. You get these backline amps sometimes that are so beat up, so messed up. One channel on the AC3, the top boost channel on the AC3 doesn't work. So you're using a normal channel. Now it's super dark. You're having to brighten it up with an overdrive. Now you got to use this overdrive as an always-on drive. Your verbs don't sound the same through. It's just, it's a mess, man. And then you look back, your mic fell down. It's ridiculous to assume that because something's digital, it doesn't sound as good as a tube amplifier live. When you bring a tube amp live to an application and you leave it into someone else's hands, whether what the microphone, what the channel strip at the board, or what the preamp is going to be doing, you're leaving half of your tone to someone else who may or may not care. Now, if you're a big act and you travel with your own sound guy or whatever, you have that luxury. But for everyone else, I think for most working musicians, they're not going to run into that all the time. And even if you do have that sometimes, you probably don't have it at every single gig. I know a ton of professional musicians who have been asked to move to a Kemper for international dates, for one-off dates, for all sorts of different events. And they always report the same thing. It works like a charm. I'm like, wow, I can't believe I'm getting that sound. So I'm not going to agree for one second that a tube amp sounds better. My question is, in what context? Like, if you take enough time and enough energy building out the rest of that signal chain, because the signal chain that gets to someone's ears includes a microphone, a preamp, and everything. So if you spend enough time, enough money building that out, can a tube amp sound better than a Kemper? Of course. I don't think much better. And by better, it's anecdotal. Could you get this rig to sound better than this rig? Yeah. But if you profiled that exact rig, would it be close? Dude, it's so close. I don't think you're going to talk about the difference. I don't think you're going to know. And you're not going to notice the difference unless it's a strict, straight up A-B comparison, like straight up, strict A-B comparison, you are not going to notice that difference. That's it, my friends. The Kemper wins. I'm going to go make this YouTube video now. Hey, my name has been HW. Hang in there, guys. I know it's crazy times, but hang in there. We got great stuff. We got life-changing IRs that I'm shooting right now, and I'm about to get back to work on that because I just shot the Fender Twin ones, got about halfway through the Pro Reverb, redid a bunch of blues. Oh, my gosh. This stuff is good. It is good. I'm getting tones out of the HX Stomp that I am drooling over, and I am not the biggest HX Stomp guy. I mean, I like it, but I'm not like, oh, this, I could replace everything, drop, sell all your gear. But I'm getting tone that on some of these IRs that I'm going, that sounds like my Kemper. That sounds as good as my Kemper. Hey, I've been HW. Thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie Podcast, episode 79, episode 80. We should do something big. And by big, I mean, I should record it from my home again with little to no post-production care taken. HW, episode 79. By the way, this is brought to you by the British Audio Tone Junkie Loaded Kemper. It's available exclusively at British Audio. They got a bunch of Kemper cabs too, guys. They got about 10 more stages and some Kemper cabs, and they're going to sell out this week. So get on that if you want it. HW, out.